subcommittee will come to order. We previously had House Bill 2431 scheduled for hearing today. It was removed at the request of sponsors because of, if I recall correctly, the problems with some individuals being able to come today. We did, however, on our notice indicate that we would take the testimony of persons appearing in reliance on the previous agenda. Some came and prefer to come back at the other hearing. If there's anyone here on 2131 who would prefer to have us hear your comments now rather than come back, we'll take them now. Otherwise, we will be rescheduling it, and it won't be postponed again, I can assure you. But unfortunately, that does happen. However, the best we can do is to say, as we have done here, if you've shown up, we'll certainly hear you now, so you don't have to come back again if you prefer not. Okay. We have two matters on a work session before our hearing. They should not detain us very long. Well, the first, 2315, the state sealed bill. Mr. Romero will be up later, right? So we'll wait on that. 2490 is the vehicle penalty for passing stop school bus bill. I asked Linda before the subcommittee took action on that if she could analyze for us a bit more in detail. Since we're pulling a single provision out of the total vehicle code with its classification structure, if there was any analysis you could briefly give us about how this affected how this jived with the rest of the code as to its classification.
Mr. Chair and committee members, at this time there are only two Class A traffic infractions in existence. One is speed racing on a highway, which is at ORS 47515. And the other one, I got this from the Motor Vehicle Division because I couldn't pick up the category on the computer anymore, but these are the two they mentioned. The second is not really even a traffic one. It is operating a snowmobile while under the influence of intoxicants, which according to Motor Vehicles Division may have been an oversight at the time they change the Class A traffic infraction for driving under the influence. Nothing was done about the operating snowmobiles, and I don't think it's been a very frequently enforced offense, but those are the only two Class A traffic infractions.
The first was what? Speed racing?
Speed racing on a highway.
What you do after this meeting?
Which, means it's sort of a drag racing section.
Okay, are there any questions of Linda? Is there a motion on House Bill 2490?
There were no amendments, I understand, proposed or discussed. I would move it to the full committee of DPAS recommendation.
Is there further discussion? Call the roll.
McCarthy?
Yes.
Hill?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Chairman?
Aye. We'll now turn to our public hearing and possible work session. House Bill 2456. Mr. Martin, Ms. Rosenbaum.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin, representing the Oregon Catholic Conference. With me is Gene Rosenbaum, who is representing the Oregon Epilepsy Association. House Bill 2456 is a piece of legislation sponsored by a number of charitable organizations, as you can see. We feel it is probably one of the most important pieces of legislation this whole session. It may trail the sales tax and judicial retirement slightly, but it's really a major importance you're going to be dealing with. It does one thing besides change gender, which is being done throughout most of the statutes this year. On line 23, on the first page, it changes $10 to $25, which is the amount of tokens that one can purchase under certain controlled circumstances to gamble in the state of Oregon. If for a moment I'd like to go back. This law was enacted in 1971. I happened to be chairman of the legislative committee that handled the legislation at that time. House Bill 1355 in the 71 session of the legislature, which had been requested by the Pendleton Roundup and the Happy Canyon organization. For any of you that have visited that event in September of each year, they do a lot of things over there. One of the things they have is a Happy Canyon, a large entertainment center. And for years, there had been gambling conducted of one sort or another, and nobody paid much attention to it. The then district attorney and later assistant to the Speaker of the House, after he got out of town for pursuing them, decided he would prosecute the Happy Canyon folks for conducting gambling. And to prevent this, a bill was passed by the legislature to allow, under certain circumstances, that kind of gambling to go on. Now, I want to make sure that you understand, you have the opportunity presently to put up $10, and you can buy $10 worth of gambling tokens, and you can go gamble. However, if you are successful, all you can do with those tokens is convert them into something, refreshments of some kind that you consume on the premise. You may notice that on the second page of the bill, in line two, there is mention of they cannot be redeemed in any distance less than 50 miles. Many people have asked, why is that in the law? I had forgotten, so I called Steve Corey, who is on the commission, the Happy Canyon Commission in Pendleton. He told me that at the time the law was passing, there was concern that if the tokens were not redeemed for something consumed on the premise, they might be taken somewhere and converted into something of value. And they decided if that was going to be done, they had to go at least to Le Grand, which is 52 miles from Pendleton, to redeem them. And they figured that would be enough of a detriment or would keep people from doing it, so that's why there's a 50-mile limitation in there. I would like Jane to take a couple of moments to explain exactly how her organization and others that are sponsoring use this particular provision of the law to gain money for their organization, and give you the reason why we'd like the $10 limit changed to $25.
I'm on the board of the Epilepsy Association of Oregon and also the Oregon School of Arts and Crafts. Particularly, the Epilepsy Association of Oregon has nearly 20 people who are their board members, who then have to go out and sell tickets, and as you all know, out of the 20, about between 8 and 10 maybe will work hard at it. And because it's such a small organization, and the name Epilepsy is still back in the dark ages, it is very hard for us to sell a large amount or to sell $100 social society type of tickets. It just isn't a name at the present time, and there are many organizations of the same ilk. Because of that, we have to make our money in other ways. This happens to be one way that does truly bring in money to us. However, the $10 in this economy, of course, is just simply not enough. 71, it was. $25, I would think by now, is comparable to the $10 as they were in 1971. All we are asking is for this one change. We don't give people any money in return, so you would not have the problem of somebody who is a consummate gambler wanting to come in and go for the high money, because there is no money that they're going to get. We have auction, and we have some prizes for that, but that is all. As far as the legalities of it, to show you how we enforce the $25 limit, what we do is we have what is called a bank. We have bank cards at that bank that are in $2.50 increments, and you may buy the full $10 worth, which is your limit that you're allowed to buy. You put your name and address and telephone number on there. And once we have punched out, which is all we do, we just use a punch, it's cheap. Once we have punched out the full $10 that you're allowed to buy in play money, you aren't allowed to buy anymore. And that is how we keep track, that no one else then comes in and uses up your card. That's the way we do it. Do you have any questions on how we fund this?
Questions? I think the committee is basically familiar with the way in which that law has been used, and I believe we understand the rationale for the, inflation adjustment of the maximum token value figure. As I mentioned, the two of you, Representative Rutherford from Yamhill County, had a call from the district attorney of Yamhill County, who is president of the Oregon District Attorneys Association, expressing a concern about the bill. He's not able to be here today. I'd like to ask if either of you perhaps...
No, I'll contact Mr. Rutherford.
Mr. Talk to Mr. Collins and see if you can get directly a little more detailed statement of his concerns. We will expect to set the bill for work session sometime in the next couple of weeks, I would imagine, and would hope to have Mr. Collins able, or someone from the DA's Association here, to dialogue with us personally. But in the meantime, you may want to acquaint yourself with exactly what his concerns are.
I'll do that.
Any other questions or comments? Representative Springer.
I'm just curious, perhaps Mr. Martin can respond to this. Are there any limitations on the number of these kinds of activities or lottery or gambling casino nights that a different organization may have, say, during a year's period? Or
Chairman,
does experience vary quite a bit from organization?
I really can't answer that. Perhaps Jane would be better able to, and I do think it probably varies between the various organizations. In the case of the Epilepsy League, they have one or two a year. One a year.
Yeah, you have to understand, again, that the reason that you can, most organizations only have one is because you do have an auction, and you can't get prizes for a lot of them. And so it doesn't pay unless you have some weekend prizes or a trip away from home. You can't engender that many out in the public, and so you have one a year, and that's all you can handle.
I appreciate what your concern is because, yeah, as an example, with the Catholic organizations, and this, some of the schools occasionally will have a casino night a year. But I think you and I both know of at least one organization that is organized. It seems to be, although it's religiously named and seeks certain exemptions, though it seems to be in business to do nothing but this and hasn't three or four a week. I don't, and there's another bill in to limit the numbers, and I can tell you what's going to happen. That organization on the southeast side of Poland will be the reason for it, but the local Salem chapter of the boys clubs will also come in here and say, hey, you're going to put us out of business if you pass that limitation bill. I don't know, Dick or Representative Springer, if the limitation is in this chapter or it's somewhere else. There's another bill in to limit to, what, 5 hours a day and 3 days a week, the times that you can conduct these kind of...
Does it extend to this form of activity, or is it just...
Well, it's bingo, and bingo is in this chapter, so, Mr. Chairman, I assume that it affects this chapter of law.
Well,
certainly, speaking at least for the several organizations we represent, we'd have no problem. Now, Happy Canyon, which conducts it 1 week a year, wouldn't like to be limited to three days a week.
Is that a Senate bill or a House bill, or do you know the call?
I forget. I saw the bill in the last few days, and I don't remember whether it's a House or Senate bill, but it's a limitation on the hours.
Well, Mr. Chair, this is a comment. I intend tomorrow night as a guest of the Portland Legal Secretaries Association, their scholarship fund, to do a little research on their casino night, the Wilson bill, so I'll be glad to report back to the committee any findings from that event.
Good.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you,
Mr.
Chairman.
You will let me know when you talk to me.
2525, Mr. Clark.
You're on 2525?
Yes.
Why don't you come on up to...
Excuse me, Chairman Myers. I didn't see the sign-up sheet for 2525.
We had appropriated them back at the desk before you arrived.
Oh.
So, is that the only bill you wish to testify on?
Yes. And there are two gentlemen here, Bud Barnes from Washington County and Lieutenant from Washington County, testify on as well.
Do you wish to precede Mr. Clark, who's here from CSD? Would you like to go ahead first?
It's Representative Farmer.
All right, why don't we just... All right. We could call you back in just a moment, but thank you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for giving us the opportunity here to testify on this bill. How did I come to the conclusion that Oregon has need for a law that will stop selling of children? I'm going to read it if you don't mind because it is rather long. Several months ago, I read in a magazine that people in certain parts of the country are attempting to sell their children, and many were succeeding. Economic circumstances are driving some people to despair. How else could one justify such a crime? At least I thought it was a crime. Then I read that there are no statutes that specifically prohibit such things in Oregon. On March 7, 1982, I read an article in the Oregonian about two suspected child selling cases right here in Oregon. One of the cases was investigated by Detective Louis Schultz of the Washington County Sheriff's Office. It concerned a Portland couple who allegedly sold their baby for $250 to a woman in a loss, but the baby was returned the next day, yet the woman did not receive her $250 back. When the Children's Services Division entered the case, they found out that the parents of the baby were jobless and the mother was selling blood plasma weekly. They also existed on food stamps and were at the eviction point from their apartment. After a warrant was issued, the baby was taken into custody by the police and placed eventually in a foster home. I don't know where the baby is at this time. In consultation with the Multnomah County District Attorney and the Portland Police, caseworkers uncovered another possible child selling case had been reported in Portland just several weeks earlier. The case involved the possible sale of a child for which the buyer produced a receipt for $100. Portland Police Detective Larry Findling ended his work on the case when it was discovered that it was not against Oregon law to sell a child. In 1975 in Josephine County, Lois Charlotte Lemoa, a mother who gave her 4-year-old daughter to another person for $1,000, was tried for abandonment and given 3 years probation. The appellate court determined in the state versus Lemon that she did not abandon her daughter because she knew her daughter would be safe and protected. Abandonment is interpreted in our statutes by the court, meant a hazard or personal injury to the child. And because she knew the family where the child was going and wasn't going to be any hazard to the child, she was only given a probation. Then 3 years ago, a Hokiam, Washington woman offered to sell her 5-year-old son for $5,500. She needed the money to pay bills. Bruce Clausen, Washington Assistant Attorney General, could not find a law under which to prosecute the woman. That was in the state of Washington. She was charged with unlawfully transferring custody of her child, but the charge eventually was dismissed. Immediately, the legislature passed a bill, that was in 1980, which made it a Class C felony for any person to sell or purchase a minor child. Conviction is punishable by up to 5 years and $5,000 fine. Many other states since then have passed legislation prohibiting child selling. Now, Texas law, well, not since then, and before that too. A Texas law passed in 1977 states a person commits an offense if the person possesses a child or has custody, conservatorship, or guardianship of a child and offers to accept, agrees to accept a thing of value for the delivery of a child to another. there is an exception for a fee paid to a child placing agency, attorneys, or physicians for services rendered in the usual course of legal or medical practice. Then in New Jersey, a couple traded their baby son for $8,800 Corvette in 1980. Could you imagine that? And were charged with selling the child. The husband spent 1 year in jail, and the woman participated in special treatment program. In most states, it is a crime to receive compensation for placing a child for adoption. A few states prohibit placing children outside the agency channels. Stringent regulations are emphasized by most states, such as limiting non-agency placements or imposing criminal sanctions for making a profit from child placement. In Idaho, it is considered a felony to engage in selling or bartering any child, punishable by $5,000 fine and up to 14 years in prison. There is a need for a law barring the sale of children here in Oregon. If baby selling becomes a great problem, the authorities are not going to be able to handle the situation. House Bill 2525 states that no person may sell, buy, or transfer for consideration the legal or permanent physical custody of any other person. The bill will also banish the selling of older children, as well as children sold, not necessarily by their parents, but by others, perhaps for sexual exploitation. Children in America need help. Child abuse is growing at enormous speed. Are we going to sit and hear about case after case and passively shrug our shoulders? Do we have to hear of dozens of cases happening in Oregon before we do something about it? I think not, and I urge your support. Now, I also have here several recommendations by people that I had contacted and talked to that for one or other reason were not able to be here. For example, Mr. Robert Burroughs from Josephine County. He did lobby for a similar bill earlier. We had, I guess, nothing was done. Mr. John Bradley, Deputy District Attorney in Multnomah County, indicated that he could be available to any of the committee members that would like to contact him, and he could talk to you if he supports the bill. He explained that also that if the buyer of a child are good parents and provide a better home than the original parents, they would not have legal custody of the child. The original parent could legally regain the child at any time. Also, if the buyer of the child mistreats or abandons the child, there is a legal recourse. It is the legal pact of custody that allows enforcement of responsibility. This bill is necessary, he feels, because even under the best of circumstances, child selling is too unstable to be in the best interest of the child. And then I had Ms. Jane Wiener, Deputy District Attorney of Multnomah County. She also supports the bill. She explained that in the case involving the child in Washington County, the district attorney's office considered trying to prosecute the parents under the criminal mistreatment statutes. However, they did not charge the parents because they would have had to stretch the law to make it fit the circumstances. The only other possibility seems it was to sue the parents in civil court on behalf of the child. This is costly, and the results were not, they did not know what results they will have. Then this morning I had a call from Sheriff Goins, president of the State Sheriff Association, who also said the association, not only him, but the association supports the bill. And he said that he also will be available if you have any question. He also wanted me to mention Sheriff Barnes. If he's here, I don't know if he's here, so he could say that the association does support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Riles.
Mr. Chairperson and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Senator Nancy Riles, representing parts of Portland and Washington County. And I'm here today to speak in support of House Bill 2525, which I co-sponsored with Representative Annette Farmer. I became concerned about the issue of child selling when there was a case that Representative Farmer has referred to in her testimony that took place in Washington County where a child was attempted to be sold for the amount of $250. That took place at a Cedar Hills gas station, which is right in the center of my district. And then as you heard from Representative Farmer's testimony, there was also an incident in Multnomah County right about that same time. And in researching the possible existence of state laws that would say child selling is definitely a crime in this state, we found that there was some ambiguity in the law, and that some of the Sheriff Bud Barnes, who is here from Washington County, can testify to the fact that law officers feel they need some help in the prosecution of these cases with a more clear statute regarding this activity. I also received, of course, a lot of calls from constituents in my area since this case took place in Washington County. One rather interesting letter was from a person who works in a medical clinic who deals with child abuse cases, and because of our work in this state on child abuse laws, thought it was strange that we didn't have ambiguity on the case of child selling. But I think there's a real element in this bill that one has to be very careful about, and I want to make it very clear that I'm not sponsoring this legislation because I think this is a large epidemic, or there are lots of cases of this kind of activity in this state. I think it's very important to have on the record, to the contrary, that the cases appear to be very isolated, and that I don't want to convey with the coverage on this or anything else that we are seeing lots of this. But the point is that if we have one incident of this, I think it points out the ambiguity in the law, and we need to make it very clear in this state, I think from most everyone's opinion, that child selling is not an acceptable practice in the state of Oregon. The second point I'd like to make is I think we should point out very clearly that there may be cases where a parent finds themselves in such a situation that they have no choice but they have to give up their child. And indeed, this can be one of the very greatest gifts of love, is to give up a child, to say that they want to place this child in a home where the child can be properly cared for and properly loved. And too often in our society, we tend to put people down when they recognize those kinds of situations, and we discourage them from giving that gift of love of a home that can protect the child. But there are appropriate avenues for dealing with that kind of situation, and that's adoption or temporary foster care. And these are avenues which have been developed through the law that are intended to protect not only the rights of the children, but also the rights of the natural parent and the adoptive parent. And this bill is designed to deal with those people who choose not to use that very responsible and caring procedure in order to deal with those kinds of situations. And I think it's very important to adopt this law because it's for those people that don't choose these options, and we simply cannot allow defenseless children to be treated as common commodities in the marketplace. There is one technical point which I wanted to raise regarding the bill, and that's under Section 2, lines 16 through 18. And I would suggest that language should be included to allow the charging of fees by an individual who acts as a referral agency, that's referring and linking prospective couples with other services to the prospective parents and to the surrogate mother. Now, it may be more appropriate to do this in House Bill 2693, which Representative Annette Farmer is the sponsor of, but I think it's something we need to deal with as we move into this now rather unclear, uncharted waters as we talk about children's rights, parents' rights, and that whole issue. But it's very important that we would not, in this bill, want to discourage any legitimate agencies that are trying to work for both the best interest of the child and the best interest of the parents. And so I offer that as a possible consideration for this bill. I just summarize by saying I think it's necessary to have the bill on the statutes. I think most of the citizens of Oregon think it is not a legal question, and I think it's important for the 83 session to resolve it very clearly in our law.
May I say
something?
Yes, the bill was very carefully drafted here, so not to. This is why I have this amendment, Section 2C. the performance of a contract for a fee under which a woman agrees to be inseminated by and to bear the child of a man not her husband, and under which either party agrees to relinquish parental right in favor of the other of the spouse. Or this, of course, is part of the next bill that I have for surrogate parenting. All of this is taken care of, but it's not going to interfere. And like Representative Trial said, anyone that is doing receiving fees through the regular channels, adopting agencies, or